This podcast was recorded Thursday, September 24th at 10:42 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like voters will punish blatant hypocrisy on the part of their elected leaders.
Hypocrisy by elected leaders?
Punish?
Let's talk politics. This is Snolly Goster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those shrewd Snollygosters who say one thing 4 years ago and then say the exact opposite now. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, House Senators Rob Portman and Sherrod Brown switched sides on the whole confirming a Supreme Court justice in an election year thing.
But first,
the suburbs. Almost as much written about as Madison Avenue. And just as much in need of reflection. Like Madison Avenue, life in the suburbs has its good moments and others not so good.
Ah, the suburbs. The place we go to escape the tensions of the turmoil of the big city, right, Mike?
Yeah, what you didn't see there is they had mislaid some bricks on a patio. Ah. Oh. First world problems.
It's very suburban.
Well, even millennials are now escaping the tensions of big city life in the suburbs. But alas, the suburbs are once again the battleground in the presidential race. And according to the president, their very existence is at stake.
Joe Biden and his bosses from the radical left want to significantly multiply what they're doing now. And what will be the end result is you will totally destroy the beautiful suburbs. Suburbia will be no longer as we know it.
Where's it going?
I don't know. But is that message working? So far, it does not look like it, at least not in the industrial Midwest. The Associated Press looked at suburban attitudes in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and found that suburbs are far from the conservative-leaning places they once were. Joining us on Snolly Goster is one of the writers of that piece, Julie Carr Smythe, Ohio State House correspondent for AP. Julie, welcome back to Snolly Goster.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Full disclosure, Julie and I both live in suburbia. Steve does not.
I do not, no.
Okay. Suburbia.
So you guys are self-deprecating with your jokes here today. I'm not. I'm just straight making fun of you.
Anyway, Julie, welcome back to Snolly Goster.
Thanks.
You spoke with State Senator Peggy Lehner, a Republican who represents a suburban Dayton district, and she did not mince words in your story.
No, I mean, she says that it's very hard where she is to try to run as a Republican and defend the president, and she's in the suburbs of Dayton. And this type of rhetoric or sentiment that we're hearing caused my colleague Tom Bowman and I to really dig down into what's going on in those areas. So it's difficult to do because Republicans don't want to speak about any weaknesses. No, neither do Democrats, obviously, on the record. But you know, when you begin to get critical mass with your sources and you realize that the story is always the same, then you can really put some reporting out there that's useful to people. This was one of the most well-read stories by AP of last week, so people are definitely interested.
Yeah, what has changed? Is it just the president's personality that's just driving away moderate Republicans and independents who live in the suburbs?
Well, no, I think that there are a lot of different things. Demographically, these areas have changed a lot over the years. A lot more Democrats who had once been sort of more isolated to the downtowns and urban areas have spread out. The suburbs themselves have been kind of absorbed by cities in some respects. So they were reliably Republican for so long, but the demographics are changing.
This piece focused on suburbs in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Let's focus on Ohio. We are Ohio's political podcast. Give us some nuance here. How does suburbs differ essentially, I guess, specifically about region? What is different about suburbs in Northeast Ohio versus Cincinnati versus Central Ohio?
Well, the suburbs in Cincinnati have been bastions of some of the most Republican fundraising and giving of really that we've known in this country. Some of the wealthiest, they're very well-heeled, wealthy areas that Republicans flock to, really. And one of the people I interviewed had been to a party with a bunch of Republicans where, you know, they six couples talking about whether or not they were going to vote. I'm sorry, three couples. They were within the 10-person limit within the state.
Good to hear.
But they were talking about whether or not they were going to vote for Trump, and only one of the three couples was left that was going to vote for Trump. So, you know, they are loyal Republicans who have their issues around his policies, his style. And there are certain fundamental kind of American beliefs that are crossing party lines this year. Suburban communities tend to be somewhat more college educated, and they're attuned to some of the things like the erosion of ethics standards and legal parameters that both parties have for a long time ascribed to and believe in as part of our democracy. And so they're getting it. And the Republicans are, the Republican Party has lost some of that college educated electorate this time around.
Yeah, when you think of Cincinnati suburbs, you think of John Boehner. He's from Westchester, suburb of Cincinnati. He was your quintessential, is still your quintessential suburban Republican when you think of what one would look like.
Right. And you've got your, you know, the Lindner family is from suburban Cincinnati. You've got the Farmer family. These are huge, you know, corporate wealthy families, some of the biggest donors in the country. In the same way, in the Columbus suburbs, we have Les Wexner, again, you know, a former Republican. I think he defected from Trump, but, you know, he lives in the New Albany area, kind of built New Albany with his own money. In the Cleveland suburbs, it's a little bit different. I mean, it is some of the wealthier residents, but many of the wealthy, some of those are more working class communities. And again, you know, Trump has lost some of that vote with the promises he made regarding manufacturing. And you know, you've got your Parmas and your Lake Views, yep. You know, Beechwood and things like that. So, and in Toledo, we're hearing the same thing, that basically these are just dumpster fires for Trump at the moment.
Your story talked a lot about this, what appears to be fading support for Trump in the suburbs. It also talked about what some saw as increasing support in small towns. And just based off population numbers, it would seem that the support in small towns would not be enough to offset any decrease in popularity in the suburbs. What exactly did you seem to find out when it comes to small towns?
Well, I mean, they're doubling down on Trump in a lot of ways. The campaign and the party have worked really hard in those areas. You know, we're seeing these Trump boat parades and rallies, festivals, and that kind of thing. And these are folks who actually are probably and perhaps more afraid of the message that he mentioned, where he says that suburbia will be no more. Well, a lot of these communities are really worried that a Democratic administration would be the end of some of the values they hold most dear, you know, in terms of abortion, prohibitions, and church and state separation. They have a lot of worries about that. And so those communities, you know, the question will be, can they come out? But in volume, like you say, but if you look at, you know, the last couple cycles in Ohio, Barack Obama, I think won maybe 12 counties in Ohio, maybe fewer, and Hillary didn't win even that many out of the 88. So, mm-hmm. You know, definitely those rural counties, they don't have volume individually in the counties, but as a whole, you know, they represent a huge swath of this state.
Yeah, we often talk about the view from Richwood on this show. I live in a town called Richwood in far northern Union County, and I think the Trump signs outnumber Biden signs 30-1. I mean, it is not even close. The base is motivated for Trump. I will tell you that, at least in rural America where I live, it seems to be a very different story in suburbia. But in rural America is very much for Trump at this point.
Yeah, as I've mentioned before, I live in Dublin, a suburb of Columbus, one of the suburbs you profiled, Julie. And one of my habits is I run all over Dublin. And this past week, I ran in the Muirfield area, which is the golfing area. And it was 10-1, Biden signs to Trump signs. Which was surprising. The other sides don't vote. We know that. But it just shows you a little bit about the passion that's there. Julie, what about the thing I suspect happens and Republicans will say is that Republicans don't want to wave the Trump flag, but they're still going to vote for him because they agree with his Republican policies. Lower taxes, less regulation, his Supreme Court picks, his military spending. So they won't put a sign on their yard, but they'll vote for him.
Right.
Did you hear some of that?
Yeah, someone just warned me yesterday, you know, yard signs don't vote, and you have to be really careful about seeing yard signs and thinking that means something, because you notice those signs, but maybe you don't notice the four or five houses in between the signs, and we don't know what's happening in terms of that. What our reporting showed, though, was that we're not talking about who's putting out signs. We're talking about deep internal polling that people are looking at, those who are really in the know. And certainly, you know, we saw Trump visit Toledo earlier this week. I think that he knows it too. And he's been to Lima, right? He sent Pence to Lima, I think. And you know, he's trying to solidify sort of some of these areas where he can.
Is this a one-off? Suburban Republicans and independents will come back to the center, perhaps, and support the Republican candidates once Trump has left the stage. Is that still a possibility? I ask this because Gene Krebs, a former Republican lawmaker from rural Western Ohio, says he is worried for his party. He fears the GOP has lost the college-educated vote and may not get it back. Is that a fear that from the folks you talk to?
I think that, yes, I would say that that's a fear, but also that Trump is so unique that no one is really considering him a trendsetter one way or another. I mean, we have seen Republicans doing well in other areas, and you know, certainly, as Steve mentions, you know, the base is super motivated, and polls are not showing that Donald Trump even is out, you know, that this race is necessarily outside the margin of error in some of these battleground states. Trump, you know, my guess would be based on just this most recent round of interviews that he probably could win Ohio. I mean, he was up here 8.5 points 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So the point of our story was kind of to talk about these other battleground states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and that were much closer than that. So Ohio is kind of being looked at as a barometer for the areas where he didn't win by 8 points.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Ohio could be a bellwether for Pennsylvania, for the suburbs around Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, and even Harrisburg, same with Detroit and Madison and Milwaukee.
Right, and I think that you and I have talked over the years about whether or not Ohio is any longer a bellwether in terms of the White House. Like, if he wins Ohio and loses the White House, that'll be huge, of course, for Ohio's history as a bellwether state, because we've always elected the person who won, especially on the Republican side.
Yeah.
So that will be an interesting day if it happens. You know, some of the people I spoke to don't feel Trump will win Ohio, but closing in on 8 points by Joe Biden seems pretty rough given what the three of us are talking about this morning.
Yeah, polls basically, Biden has a little lead in most polls in Ohio. I mean,
it's basically tied.
Yeah, most of his leads are within the margin of error, yeah. So it's certainly a toss-up at this point.
Even the last one that came out this week, Baldwin Wallace. I know people question it, but it shows what the others have shown, that Biden's up by like one, which is basically he's tied. They're tied. So, Julie Carr-Smyth, are you in the suburbs now, or are you downtown?
I actually am downtown. I had to cover a court hearing this morning, but yeah, I'll be going back to lovely Worthington after I get done here.
Well, they're going to move the courts to the suburbs, right? If Joe Biden, I don't know, whatever.
More importantly, what's John Boehner doing? You got me thinking, about John Boehner
he's
now.
He's got a book coming out. You should check out the cover.
He's probably swilling a scotch, smoking a cigarette, and having
drinking,
a good cry.
He's in a dark room, sitting in a leather chair, holding a glass of Merlot.
And I think that the book is called On the House.
Yes. It's because he worked at a bar, you know.
Sure.
It'll be an interesting read. I wonder if he'll tell some tales.
Julie Carr-Smythe, AP correspondent for the Ohio State House. Thanks again.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Julie.
We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious CBUS is WOSU series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
All right, we're back on Snollygoster. Of course, the biggest political story of the past week has been the death of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the rush to fill her seat by Election Day. And it looks like it's going to happen because now Republicans like Rob Portman say it's okay to fill a Supreme Court seat in an election year.
Yeah, 4 years ago, Portman said the opposite. In an op-ed, he wrote, quote, "I have concluded that the best thing for the country is to trust the American people to weigh in and to have the confirmation process take place in a less partisan atmosphere, awaiting the result of a Democratic election rather than having a nomination fight in this contentious election year environment will give the nominee more legitimacy and better preserve the institutional credibility of the Senate and the court."
That was then. This is now.
When you're in an election year and you have divided government, so the president and the Senate are of different parties, there has not been a single confirmation since the 1880s. It's a different context when you have that divided government.
It is a different context, but it's certainly a different stance as well. Sherrod Brown, Ohio's Democratic senator, said this in February 16 when Mitch McConnell refused to consider an Obama nominee.
Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution is clear. The president shall nominate Supreme Court justice with the advice and consent of the Senate. It doesn't say may, doesn't say maybe, it doesn't followed by a clause that says senators don't have to do their jobs in an election year. It doesn't say anything about that.
Now, Brown there was sitting next to a, standing next to a sign that said, "Do your job," aimed at the senators at the time. But now he says he does not want senators to do their jobs. He says the Senate should hold off until after the election and the inauguration if Joe Biden wins. Let's get into some of the nuance here and how these politicians are reframing what's going on.
For people who host a sarcastic political podcast, this is manna from heaven.
Yes.
This is just fantastic. There are some subtle differences, we should say. We are much closer to the election now than in early 2016 when Antonin Scalia died.
And that is Sherrod Brown's argument. His argument now,
that we're less than 50 days away,
is that we are, you know, within 2 months of the election, where when Scalia died, it was February, and it would have been a year of only having eight justices, and we couldn't go a year without appointing a nominee. Now he's saying because we are so close to the election, we should hold off. He also said in 2016 that the American people did not elect Barack Obama to a second term for 3 years or 3.5 years. They elected him for 4 years. Of course, the American people elected Donald Trump for 4 years, and we have a half a year, give or take, left in his term.
Yeah, the American people also elected a Republican-controlled Senate.
And that's Rob Portman's argument.
And the Senate holds the power here, and elections have consequences. So all this, what we should do morally, whatever. You're making the argument that's convenient for you at this time. Both parties are, let's be honest. And the Republican-controlled Senate does not have to do anything they don't want to do.
Yeah, and Portman says the reason why he blocked it 2016 was because there was a Democratic president and a Republican Senate, and now it's okay because there's a Republican Senate and a Republican president.
He says his comments in that op-ed were written in the context of divided government. It does mention a divided nation. It does not mention divided government. He's just he's making it up now that that's the context it was written in. Maybe, I mean, it was.
Certainly wasn't his main point for
you. No, it was written in that context. It was written at a time when we had a Democratic president and a Republican-controlled Senate. But he didn't mention that back then.
Yeah. Question is, this is going to happen. I don't think there's much doubt. Barring
with Mitt Romney.
Barring a surprise, right. You know, like a, you know, Clarence Thomas, Justice Kavanaugh type surprise. I do not see this being held up. I think this happens likely before the election. And it would be fast, but not tremendously faster than other nominations. Sandra Day O'Connor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg nominations happened within, you know, 6 or 8 to 9 weeks.
Everyone's talking about it happening before the election. Why couldn't it happen after the election, even if he loses? I mean, couldn't a lame duck president nominate? I mean,
absolutely. They're all saying has the vote.
Everyone's saying before the election. That doesn't. No. It could happen between November 3rd and New Year's Day.
Yeah. But which side does it motivate? Trump supporters or Biden supporters? My own opinion is Trump supporters whose main issue was the court, who he was going to name to the Supreme Court, were always going to vote for him. Because they knew that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, at 87 years old, would likely not be on the court for all of a Donald Trump's second term. So they always knew that Donald Trump at some point was going to replace Justice Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, whether she died or whether she retired or became too ill to serve. So they were already going to vote for him. I think it may motivate Democrats to say this is why we need a Democratic president and a Democratic Senate. But in the past, the abortion issue and the courts really have not rallied Democrats as effectively as they have rallied Republicans to the polls.
Does it motivate anyone? We're 40 some days before the election. Everyone has their opinion.
Everyone has an
Trump
opinion,
at this
Steve,
point.
I mean, but not everyone may show up to vote.
Do you think this gets some people to the polls?
Yeah, I think it gets some.
You think some more angry Democrats than pleased Republicans?
What the Republic? If you listen to the Democrats, their talking point, they're not really talking about overturning Roe versus Wade as being the big threat to it posed by a conservative court. It's the repeal of Obamacare. That's the number one reason they want to hold on to a liberal majority, or at least what they have now in the Supreme Court, is to maintain the Affordable Care Act. And I'm sure that is the number one issue, health care during a pandemic, health insurance, when people are losing their jobs during a pandemic. They think that's a more effective, Democrats think that's a more effective argument than arguing Roe versus Wade.
Remember the day when Supreme Court precedent was important?
Was it ever important?
It was more important than it is now. Yeah. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act, which was ruled on. Justice Roberts was the swing vote. How long ago?
Yeah.
Not that long ago. I mean, certainly, I mean, Roe v. Wade, I understand that was two generations ago at this point. But, I mean, not the Affordable Care Act ruling. That was not that long ago.
Yeah.
Either way, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, the shrewdest political move of the week. A lot of nominees could be this week. This time we will go to my home county, Union County, the largely rural county just northwest of Columbus.
Yes, apparently a couple of teenagers were stealing Joe Biden yard signs from people's lawns. Very shrewd. Very shrewd. Not nice, not ethical, perhaps criminal, but very shrewd.
What was not shrewd was posting a video of a car trunk full of apparently stolen Biden signs on social media, with the social media IDs of a few people. Democrats spotted the post and referred the matter to police, who are now investigating.
Stealing lawn signs, nothing new, but of course, like everything else these days, the thefts have escalated. Trump supporters claim their signs are being stolen as well.
They probably are.
But here's the best thing. Some people say they are putting GPS trackers on their yard signs.
That's a lot of effort. What's a little GPS tracker cost?
I don't know. They can get those little, you know,
little chip stickers,
I think. Yeah. Some people are putting hot sauce on them, coating them with manure, animal manure.
Okay. Again, a lot of effort. For that $25 donation you had to make to the county party to get that sign? Yeah. Really? You're going to put a GPS unit on it? I don't have a GPS unit on my car. Anyway, that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We leave you with the Ben Folds classic, Rockin' the Suburbs.
Was it a classic?
It was a classic for my generation, for people in their mid to late 30s, I think. A cult classic, anyway.
Classic in the suburbs,
It wasn't a top 10 hit, but it was a fun song.
It is a fun song.
Anyway, if you live in the suburbs, if you live in Union County, wherever it might be, leave us a good review on iTunes, tell your friends about us, whatever it is, just help get the word out. For our audio engineer this week, Kevin Petrilla, our student producer, Jack Long, and our web editor, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.
I'm rocking the suburbs, just like Michael Jackson did. I'm rocking the suburbs.